Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Ask a Muso podcast, brought to you by Jim's Cleaning, Butterham South. I'm stoked to be welcoming one of Australia's best drumming figures. I got Dan Kerbling on the other end, and I'm excited to throw over to him, and he can kick things off for us.
Mate, lovely to be here. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Stoked to be on it. I listened to the Sarah Kretz episode. What a legend she is.
Indeed.
So good stuff, mate. I'm loving the episodes. For those that don't know, my name's Dan Kirby. I'm a drummer from Melbourne, Australia. I play for Australian acts Bliss and SO 28 Days, Behind Crimson Eyes, Esoteric, which is SO's side project. And I've done various bits and pieces. I'm here right now in my drum school, DK Drums Academy, just in Melbourne, in Yarraville here, where I am blessed to be chatting with my man.
Fantastic.
It's good to be here, mate.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm stoked to have you on here. I guess what I'll do is I'll start with the obvious, which is where you are and what you were just talking about, DK Drums Academy. Where do you want to sort of begin there?
Mate, so I've been teaching drums for about 6 years now. My dad was an amazing drum teacher. He taught for like 40 or 50 years. Mate, it's always been something that I wanted to do, and I just kind of finally took the plunge a few years ago and started. I used to hire a studio room maybe two times a week. I'd bring my drums into the studio, set them up, teach, pack them down, take them back home, put them back in the cupboard. So it was a slog, man. It was a lot of hard work. And I actually started in Ballarat also. I did Melbourne and Ballarat at the same time and taught out of my mother and father's lounge room from my dad's setup because I thought no one would want drum lessons. So I thought, I'll worst case scenario, I'll go to Ballarat. I'll teach on my dad's drum kit and, nothing to lose. And then I had a full bang. I had like 15 students in Ballarat from day one. So it's good, mate. Now I'm in Yarraville. I've got my own room set up here, and we do drum videos in here. We do face-to-face lessons, host a bunch of online lessons. It's just drums, everything, mate. It's great. I come in here all the time. I'm just living in here. The only bad thing about it is I guess I'm just in a black room all day. I don't see the sun very much, but it's great, man. I love being here and working with everyone, and it's cool. It's a good vibe. It's a fun place and a place, of course, to learn all things drums.
I've loved watching from when I didn't really know much about it, and I was just seeing it occasionally pop up into my feed with people like Daniel Gay and eventually Sarah once I got connected with the Big Sam Percussion fam. Watching that development and watching how you've adapted to the way things are at the moment, I've subscribed to that and have enjoyed sort of engaging with you on that front. So how many years has DK Drums been going for?
I reckon 6 years.
In that space?
Yeah, I've been in this room for probably 2.5 years, since November 2018. So yeah, this is the hub now. It's nice, man, because as I said previously, I used to have to take my gear to a rehearsal room every, a couple of times a week and set up, and then sometimes people don't come, and then you're going out at night, dragging all the stuff in the cold into your car. It was a slog at the start. But it's cool, man. It's good. I'm very lucky to have this space here. I'm at Kindred.
Oh, okay. Yes, I'm familiar. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, awesome. So where did music start for you? Has it always been drums? You said obviously your dad been drumming for, forever. Where did it all start?
Mate, I just used to see him playing drums. We had a kit in the garage. I grew up in Ballarat. We had a big garage out in the back. Mate, so I always saw him playing, and that's where it started, really. I just started playing, just bashing around when I was a little kid. Like, I got a kit maybe when I was 4, and just kind of took off from there. It's just been a part of my life, I mean? And, I just gravitated towards it naturally in the beginning, just for fun, really.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So there was no necessarily end goal where you were thinking you want to follow in whatever your dad was doing and go, well, teaching's my end goal, and that you wanted to, like, that's where you want to end up, or you want to play in a band and become famous. There was no necessarily direction of that early days?
No, there was none of that early on. It was purely just for the love of the craft. I just enjoyed playing the drums for years, probably about a decade, up till I was about 12 or 13, when I kind of met some kids and we started a band. And then I realized that I could kind of put my drumming into a group, and we could work together, and then I could make better friend, like cool friends or whatever, and play music and have fun. And then, but I went and saw Blink-182 in Body Jar when I was 12. I caught a bus from Ballarat with a bunch of kids down to Rod Laver Arena. And we saw Body Jar and Blink-182 play. And yeah, that was the first time it kind of came together. Like I saw a live show and I saw what you can actually do on the drums and where it can take you and the reaction of the crowd and the lights and the, you know, and the sound. And it was just electric, man. So that kind of was a moment where I was like, I'd love to do that. That's something I'd love to do. And then I've been on the mission ever since, mate. Been on the mission ever since.
I can definitely relate exactly to your Rod Laver story because I had one exactly the same. I was in a band at the end of high school. I got the tickets by accident, actually, and we were up in the nosebleeds. And, you know, it was the first time I went to a stadium show, and to see Taylor Hawkins doing his thing and just the production value of moving the whole band for this rotation in the middle for this second stage and him being an absolute gun player. And I remember Dave Grohl opening the show with, "We don't play that 1 hour rock show. We don't play that 1.5 hour rock show. We play that 2.5 motherfucking hour rock show." And they did. They didn't stop. They played for 2 hours straight. The only time they stopped was because someone proposed in the middle of the stage. And that was part of the show. That was the only time they stopped. And I was like, wow, he's an athlete.
Mate, full athlete, you know, that's why he's so lean, because if you're playing drums like that for 2.5 hours, nights, you know, a couple of nights a week even, you're skinny, man. It's a hard work. It's definitely hard work.
Yeah, you've probably put a hell of a lot of hard work in for some of your projects. You've got quite a few notable projects that you opened up with. So sort of give us a bit of a rundown. Where did things go from, you know, like playing school assemblies and being in like high school bands to get the opportunity to play with Bliss and SO, like yes, the Canberra video that I often show people when I talk about you and things like that, when you're playing that GoPro live set at Canberra with Bliss and SO. What was the in-between part?
I'll break it down as fast as I can because it's quite a long journey, but started in high school. We just started a punk rock band, me and a couple of mates, played at assemblies, fell in love with performing there, and then we started playing in small shows in our regional town of Ballarat. We grew up in Ballarat. We would play the Corova Lounge there, and we'd get all of our friends there. So, you know, we'd have maybe 150 friends come to each gig, and then all of a sudden when nationally touring bands were coming to town and they weren't selling out the venue, they would call on us to then sell the rest of the tickets. So we had something to offer the bigger bands when they came through to our little town. So we kind of got into the scene a little bit, made some friends, figured out how it worked, figured out who was doing what, who was going places, etc., who we wanted to align with. And then Behind Crimson Eyes were coming to Ballarat and they didn't have a drummer at the time. I did follow them back in the MySpace days. They had the seventh biggest MySpace account in Australia.
Whoa!
Seventh biggest. The Veronicas were ahead of them and can't remember who else. Anyway, so they came to town. They didn't have a drummer, and I basically just kind of put my hand up and said, you know, I'd love to do your Victorian shows. And then here's where it all comes back around to having drum videos. I had filmed a really good studio drum video where I'd played some reggae, hip hop, and I did some marching stuff. And basically, I kind of put them all together. It was like a little resume. So when the opportunity pops up, it's going to pop up somewhere, I'd have something cool to show. And then I obviously showed that to those boys and they enjoyed that. And mate, one thing led to another, joined BCE, joined 28 Days, played for Bliss and SO, you know, and it's just kind of just gone from there. But I mean, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. We're talking about 20 years of trying. So, you know, to any young drummers watching, yeah, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. It takes a long time, and if you want to get to, you know, to play in a really big band, whether you're a session guy or you're in a big band or whatever, there's steps along the way, and not often are you just going to go from not playing any gigs to playing with Australia's biggest group or whatever, you know. There's a whole bunch of different steps, and it's a grind, and a lot of people give up on the grind at some point because it gets hard and you do get older and you do have to pay rent and you know things can be very hard, but if you persist and you really do have a passion for it, then what's stopping you?
Exactly. And it's all like, it's obviously there's the money side of things, and you know, if you want people to take it seriously, you need to have the gear. And if you want people to have videos, you said you've put a lot of money into stuff of your own when there was 100% chance you were going to get no return instantly. You were doing it like with your resume, so to speak. That was a lot of fold on the off chance something was going to come up.
Yeah, so that's a big one, mate. I've always been big on that, and I still do that to this day. I still invest quite a lot of money in certain times into creating epic content, you know, because you've got to think, if you do want to play for bigger acts, or you do want to create opportunity for yourself, you have to present yourself in a particular way that's going to get attention. You know what I mean? You have to, you kind of have to be a step ahead in some way than someone else. So whether that's your playing, or whether it's your production, or whether it's your concepts or your ideas or your creativity or your style or something, it all adds up. It all adds up. So the more you can do to put yourself in a really good position and make yourself appealing to, say, a band or an artist or someone who's looking for a drummer, if that's what you want to do, then that's what you got to do. You got to build the team around you as well. You got to have good director, good audio guy, good editor, you know?
Yeah, and you got to build yourself a team. Like, I'm at the stage where I obviously do everything. But then when you get to that, I've got connections with people. I've got a fantastic videographer from On The Day Films, and he's a gun. But I'm just not in a financial position to be able to utilize him for anything. But I have mentioned it to him, doing something like you've said, and producing a resume, putting together, getting him for a few hours, getting it. Oh, we've got an awesome white infinity space in just around the corner in one of the industrial estates, which we've shot photos from. I could get in there, get in that space, nut it out for a few hours, and play lots of stuff. Even if I'm mixing it at this point, if I'm still doing the mixes of the drums, it gives me an opportunity to produce a product that I'm proud of, that I can go, yep, so you want to know about me, that's what it looks like.
You want to put your best foot forward, you want to present yourself in the best way. So whatever you can, whatever's at your disposal to use, you got to do it. But in saying that, you know, it comes back to your playing too. You got to be ready. Got to be ready, you know. So when the opportunities do arise, you've got the content to show, but then you've got the chops or whatever, the skill to kind of back it up. And again, that's a marathon. If you're a kid and you're not playing in a band or anything like that, and a big band comes along, there's going to be a gap there. Just your gig knowledge, your live performance knowledge or whatever. So you do have to do a lot of the smaller gigs and build yourself up.
When I think about my drum IQ and how that's changed over like the short term and over the long term, from the beginning to wanting to play fills every four bars to going, in fact, I might not even play a fill this song. I'll just sit behind it. Like, just the things you learn, and I've had good teachers along the way that have taught me how to play songs, not just how to play a song.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's been invaluable as a resource to me.
You just learn so much along the way. Every new kind of, so every band that I play in, everything's a learning curve. They all work differently. They've all got expertise in certain areas, and they all share different kind of views on things sometimes as well. You know, some bands play to a click, some bands are track heavy, some bands have no click, some bands like you to play certain bits slightly behind the click, some, and then other sections slightly in front of the click. So they start kind of, you know, you just learn a lot of different ways of how people work, and the more you can adapt to that, the more experience you've got, the more you've got to offer. So if you say you can't really play that well to a click, and all of a sudden you get asked to join a band and they play to a click live, you're in strife. So the more you can do in the practice room, the better, you know, better prepared you'll be. But then again, you learn, as I said, you learn as you go in different instances. So different bands, I learned different things. Unwritten Law, I just toured with Unwritten Law in February. They don't play with any click, they like to do it by feel. And the way that I would keep in time with that particular band is I'd have to watch the singer, how he danced. Simple as that. I listen to the moves, because he does all these moves. I watch his moves. His moves are in line with my drumming. I have to listen to his voice when he sings. If he wants it to be a bit slower, he'll sing slightly slower. I have to adapt to that. I was listening to the main guitarist a lot. He would start a lot of the songs. So when we were playing, I'd have him louder in my mix. And I'd always be watching, if I'm feeling a bit fast compared to the guitarists, I'll slow myself down. If he's a bit slow, I'll slow myself down, whatever. So it's little thing, intricate things like that, which you can't really teach and you can't really learn until you're in that live circumstance. And you have to, here's the other thing, you have to trust the people that you're playing with to learn like that. So obviously the singer from Unwritten Law, Scott Russo, is a gun. He's done it pro for 20, 25 years. So when he's telling you this stuff, he's passing on 25 years of punk rock legendary wisdom onto me. I listen and I take it in. You might be in a band with, I'm not personally, but you know, you can come across floggers as well in a band. You could come across some flogger who's like telling you, you know, that your time is, it's out, you gotta watch the way he dances or whatever, and you might be like, nah, like what? You know what I mean? Like, you gotta be careful where you're getting your advice from as well. I've been lucky that I've had some legends who I adore, I take it on and learn from that, you know what I mean?
Quality of information as well as quantity of information.
Yeah. You want to get your information from people who have done it and people you respect.
No, and that makes perfect sense. That's how you build a network, and like the network that you've been building, that I've enjoyed being a part of and becoming a part of, that's been awesome to see. And I feel like the drumming community is by and large a really supportive community anyway, which I really appreciate, having been in bands and seeing how, especially like in Victoria, my sort of experience revolves around a lot of people in the pop punk scene who are all chums until we've played the gig, and then it's all like, well, I'm better than you anyway, and it's more about lifting you up. Whereas the drummers, I'm still friends with them, so the drummers all hang out and say, oh yeah, that was good, oh, good show, man, and everyone else is like, yeah, but like my guitar solo was better, and it's all about, I'm still better than you, like we're friends, but I'm still better than you. And whereas I don't notice that on the drums.
Yeah, nah, the drums aren't like that. Drummers are always cool. The drumming community is great, man. Everyone supports each other. Everyone shares their tips, their secrets, gear, whatever. Everyone's cool. I've never really come across an idiot drummer, to be honest. Everyone's cool. And also, like, often the successful drummers or the ones that are really, really good or playing big bands or whatever, play with big artists, they're always cool as well. They're always super chill. The drummers are the nice guys, man. We're the guys and girls up the back. You know, we're holding it down. You know, the front people can do their things. We're the chill ones. It's very approachable.
No, that's fair. So in regards to gigs for you, this could be like picking favourite children. What's sort of what would be your favourite show that you can say, hang your hat on, I loved that. That is my pinnacle moment that I've enjoyed to date.
I've had a couple, man. I've had the most recent one was with Unwritten Law in Melbourne. We played a festival in Melbourne in February. It's a big crowd. We were second headline. It was us then, Everclear. So we had a really good slot. We crushed the set. I had my film director, Pete, come out and film it. Had my best mate and my girlfriend there. Because for me, Unwritten Law is my favourite band of all time. So they're Southern Californian punk rock legends. So same town, same vintage as Blink-182. I think they've even, Blink have mentioned Unwritten Law in lyrics before. They've done a whole bunch of shows together. Like, they're literally that Southern Californian punk rock kings. So for me, being able to play drums for them when they were out here was like a massive tick off the list. You know, I was like, shit, when I was, you know, 14 to 24, like, and they still are my favorite band, but like, I used to wear what the singer would wear, like Scott Russo, the guy I was talking about before. He would have these necklaces. I would wear the same necklaces. I'd wear the same t-shirts. I'd dressed like them for literally 5 years of my life. I thought I was Unwritten Law. You know, it was pretty sick to be able to go back later in life and be their drummer, like be on stage and play drums for them. So that was a big one for me. Also, I had my best mate come down to the gig, and he's the guy I started in bands with, right? He introduced me to punk rock, he introduced me to being in a band, and basically we idolized Unwritten Law our whole lives, We'd go to all of their shows when they come to Australia. And when we were 15 years old, we went and saw Unwritten Law in Geelong. Underage, we were 15, it was an over 18 gig. We literally walked up, we bought our tickets on my mum's credit card. I painted a moustache on. Painted a moustache on with my mum's mascara. We walked up to the security guard, and the security guard's like, ID boys, we didn't have it. He's like, nah, you're out. Kicked us out. We went and hung out. We were bummed out. Went and hung out at the front of the venue, and we met these girls, and they're like, look, we know Unwritten Law. They're coming. We'll get you in. Unwritten Law pull up in their van, get out of the car, and the singer, Scott Russo's like, right, are you boys with these girls? We're like, yeah. He's like, right, I need 5 backstage passes for all of these guys. Go sort it out to his tour manager. Tour manager comes out, gives us backstage passes. We walk in, and we're hanging out. And it was Unwritten Law, Sum 41, and Goldfinger. In this tiny room, as big as my drum lockout studio, and we're just in this room with our heroes, like 2 15-year-old kids and literally 3 of the biggest southern, like 3 of the biggest punk rock bands in the world. So that was like a moment, another moment where I was like, fuck, this is so sick. I want to be doing this when I grow up. You know, and then 15 years later, I'm playing drums for them in Australia. So that was a cool one. But I've got other ones, man. I've got Bliss and Esso stories, I've got 28 Days stories, BCE stories, but that's the most recent one, so I'll just tell you that one.
That's pretty much everything you could possibly want.
Fully. I had one of my high school friends reach out to me, and he's like, mate, I remember when we were in the music room, I was playing, when we were 14, I was playing him an Unwritten Law song on guitar. And he remembered that, you know, and he called me. He's like, dude, you're playing drums for Unwritten Law now. What the fuck? Like, I remember you playing me their songs when you were 14. And I had another guy whose album I played on. He came to our Queensland show, and he's like, man, when you were playing on my album, I played on his album probably 5 years ago, this solo artist. He's like, I asked you, what would be your ideal gig? He's like, when would you, like, say, it's done? And I said to him 5 years ago, I said, oh, if I played for Unwritten Law, I'm out. And he's like, you're fucking playing with him tonight, man. What the hell? Shit like that is cool. Really cool, man. Really, it's a spin out because, you know, I still talk to Scott the singer on the phone. It's just weird, man, because he's like my childhood hero. So you just got to get over that, you know, which is a whole other thing. But anyway, eventually it just became kind of normal, you know. Few shows in, it was just like any other tour, really, but sick.
Yeah, that's a pinnacle. For me, that's playing a stadium show. I want to be playing a stadium show where everyone is, whether I've written the song or not, I'm playing a stadium show and everyone in the crowd is singing the words to the song that I'm playing. That's my pipeline dream.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
That Bliss and Esso video in Canberra just reminds me of that when everyone's singing Addicted back to them, and I'm just like, that's my pinnacle. Doesn't matter, it's not my song.
It's crazy, man. With Bliss and Esso, they're... The people at the show, at the Bliss and Esso shows, just love Bliss and Esso, man. Their fan base is insane. They sing every word so loud. Like, it's insane. And I have my ears in, so often I'm kind of in my own little world. But sometimes, you know, I'll pop one out when I get comfortable a few songs in. And it's just deafening. It adds a whole new feel to it when you cop the sound off thousands of people screaming the words back. It's sick. Sick. But they have it, man. Listen, so when, as soon as the show starts, they have the people in the palm of their hands. The people just, as soon as the show starts, boom, it's on. It's hectic the whole way. It's freaking cool, man.
That engagement, like that's such a big thing to be able to have engagement for ever, like for the whole thing.
Yeah, mate, it is. It's a real gift for those two, like those two guys have a gift, you know, and Tarek the DJ, they've got a gift for entertaining. It's just as simple as that. They've got it, you know, they've got it, and their chemistry works. It's cool to watch their chemistry before we go on stage and the chemistry on stage. It's cool, man. You learn so many little things from like just working with amazing artists like that. They've got a vibe and an energy which is electric, and it just shows live.
I started playing with a rapper. I started playing with a guy called Mythic, and I ended up flying down to Victoria at the beginning of the year before we all had to sit inside. and actually showed him videos of you playing with Blissinesso and said, hey, because we went to uni together, and his live scene was his DJ and him, and that was cool. And I said, how about if it was not just you two? How about if it was me too? And he said, how would that go? And I said, this is what this guy does. It's what it would look like. And I pretty much hooked him from there. And we did like four shows together, I think, all together. And I played as his backline. It was the DJ and I. And I played over some of his earlier tracks that he couldn't take the drums out of because he didn't have the original stems. But otherwise, he took all the drums out and I just smack along to his stuff. And my last gig was, the 17th of Jan at the Matthew Flinders Hotel in Shaddy, and he had his EP launch, and I flew down from Sunny Coast and, smashed it out with him.
Sick. Yeah, cool, man. That's great. It's good to see Australian hip-hop embracing the drummers, you know. Drumming, you know, there's electronic music has kind of taken some drummers out. You know, hip-hop's traditionally like a turntablist and some MCs. You know, you see all the kind of mainstream acts all have drummers, so they're giving drummers some work, which is cool because they could essentially do it with a DJ, but let's be honest, it's way better when there's a drummer there. Drumming is such a physical thing. It works so well with a heavy hip-hop beat, and it just adds a whole new element to the show, hey?
Absolutely. I've enjoyed it. Like, I've got an old rock group that I've been playing with, and we had an EP launch in November, and I got my other group, my main group, Total Radio Silence. We've been putting some stuff out. It's like a pop grunge sort of style. But playing hip-hop has been so much fun. And probably the best thing I got out of uni was actually playing hip-hop before I moved, and then playing it still when I got asked to fly down.
Yeah, sick. Yeah, it's fun, man. You can... So many different types of hip-hop and different types of hip-hop drumming, too. You can... It's fun to... It's fun to muck around with it. It's just different to rock.
Yeah, I absolutely adore it.
Yeah, it's sick. It's really cool.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. I have had an absolute ball on the other side, hearing about your musical exploits and the like.
Thanks for having me, man. It's been a good chat.
Yes. So before I go, what do you want to plug? Have you got anything else coming up that you can talk about? Is there anything you want to tell the socials about DK Drums Academy and all that?
For sure, mate. So just Instagram's at Dan Kirby. The drum school's DK Drums Academy, which is here in Yarraville. I'm teaching a whole bunch of online stuff at the moment, which is cool. And mate, listen, as I've got some new songs coming out, we're about to kick off that, which will be fun. And mate, I'll just be grinding away in here till then.
Fantastic. That sounds great. And no doubt we'll be connecting through the things you've sent across for covers and things like that. I've been doing with Sarah and stuff, and that's been awesome to have your ears and eyes on that. And I'm excited for what the future holds.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Great stuff. Great to chat. And
yes,
I'll chat to you real soon.
Yes, thanks for being on the podcast with me, mate.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, so that's another episode of Ask a Muso in the Can. I had Dan Kirby on there, and it was fantastic to have a chat with him. So until next time, I will see you all later.